AIDS brings a response from the government.
AIDS, the disease which claims life.
Welcome to AIDS Lost Voices with me, William Hampson. In this series, we journey through the decades to explore how Britain reported on the AIDS pandemic. We'll delve into the newspaper archives from the 80s, 90s and noughties, unearthing individual stories that reveal the human experiences behind the headlines. Join me as we seek to understand the complexities of a crisis that reshaped lives and challenged societal perceptions. Ready? Let's go.
And suddenly, Relax is keeping Radio Gaga off the number one spot. Don't think Freddie was best pleased.
Oh, sure.
Who are they?
Yeah.
He was heard saying in the offices of EMI. That's no weird. One's ever heard of them.
In the land of the free, you can be what you wanna be.
Holly Johnson is an influential and much-loved English singer, songwriter and artist, best known as the charismatic lead vocalist of the iconic band Frankie Goes to Hollywood. The group rose to prominence in the early to mid-1980s, achieving significant commercial success with their bold sound and provocative themes. By the 1st of March 1987, Frankie Goes to Hollywood performed their final concert together at Rotterdam Ahoy in the Netherlands, marking the end of an era for the band. And following Holly's departure, a tumultuous legal battle ensued with their record company, ultimately resulting in Holly's victory. The triumph enabled Holly to launch her solo career with MCA, which began to flourish in 1989 with the release of his debut album, Blast. The album soared to number one on the UK Albums Chart, bolstered by hit singles like Love Train and Americanos, both of which reached the top five in the UK Singles Chart. Then, in 1991, Holly was diagnosed with HIV, prompting him to retreat from public life to prioritise his health and well-being. This period of introspection culminated in the release of his autobiography in 1994, A Bone in My Flute, where he candidly chronicled his experiences and struggles. But before Holly tested positive for HIV in 1991 and went public with his status in 93, he had always been an openly gay member of Frankie Goes to Hollywood. In an article from the Daily Mirror dated the 9th of March 1985, Holly reflected on the band's success with their hit single Relax, which not only topped the charts but also became an anthem of liberation and expression. However, amid his rising stardom, the emerging AIDS crisis loomed large, casting a shadow over the vibrant nightlife and gay community that the band had championed, where the Daily Mail wrote. Success has saved Holly Johnson. In just 1 year, he has moved from the bleak prospect of a Liverpool social security office to wearing top designer clothes and lunching in top London restaurants. It is 13 months since Relax seduced its way to the top of the pops and Frankie Goes to Hollywood became overnight superstars. Holly says cheerfully, and I'm not even going to attempt to do his accent, quote, I know it's a bit melodramatic, but we were on a downward trail of death and destruction. If Frankie hadn't taken off, I and the other members of the band could easily have been dragged into the sewer. We were teetering on the edge, end quote. When Relax was first released, Holly was living the song's philosophy to the hilt. He was totally promiscuous and proud of it. Quote, I am searching for the ultimate erotic experience, end quote. He said just before Christmas 1983, quote, The life of a heterosexual is a dull and boring one. I'm open to all offers, end quote. Today, remember 1985, behind his tortoise shell glasses, he just smiles at the memory and says, quote, I've had to become a lot more stable in my personal relations. Then I was exploring the seedier side of life, trying anything and everything. But being in a band on the wave of a giant success, I knew it was very dangerous. I suppose success saved us all. It threw us into a maelstrom. We had to survive. End quote. A friend gave Holly a portable filing cabinet last April. He laughs as he recalls the cabinet's little tags marked bank, insurance and mortgage. That was when, age 24, he decided to grow up. Quote, "Now my lifestyle is very different, almost traditional. I go to bed before 1 in the morning and get up early. There are no drugs around. I only go out to nightclubs occasionally. I like to celebrate my birthday." End quote. Back in the days before Relax, Holly was afraid of nothing. Quote, "AIDS doesn't frighten me. It's an overrated danger." End quote. Things have changed now and Holly has the courage to admit it. Quote, "AIDS is frightening because it will spread. We are all at risk. It has certainly helped me to calm down my excesses. Last summer, I saw a friend of mine die of AIDS. It freaked me out totally. It was enough to make me cry, and I haven't done that since I was 17. End quote. Although Holly is open and honest about the knife edge he walked, he clams up tight about his home life. He has a friend, Wolfgang, who travels with the Frankies group. Quote, "I don't like to talk about it, but I do have an anchor in my life now. A partner who is a bit older than me and a lot more sensible." End quote. Frankie Goes to Hollywood know that they still have a lot to prove. They still have to get an American hit. Quote, "Just imagine if we had arrived in America to a Beatles-type welcome. We would have become hideously arrogant. You'd be talking to an absolute monster." End quote. Holly Johnson has conquered that. Fame and fortune suit him. Now, we can't talk about the 1980s or Frankie Goes to Hollywood without talking about the Frankie Says Relax t-shirt, because it is undeniably one of the most iconic fashion items of the 1980s, serving as a cultural touchstone for both those who lived through the era and those who admire its nostalgic charm. Originally released in 1984, its resurgence in 1987 solidified the t-shirt's status as a symbol of pop culture rebellion, spurred by the successes initially of Frankie Goes to Hollywood's hit single, Relax. Because in 1987, amid swirling rumours of an impending band split while on tour, the iconic Frankie Say Relax t-shirt experienced a remarkable reinvention, where on the 19th of January 1987, the band performed at the NEC Arena in Birmingham, drawing amazing reviews from the media, including coverage by the Coventry Evening Telegraph, who on the 22nd of January 1987 reported, "Frankie Goes to Hollywood, the group born to outrage, came out with a new slogan at their strong NEC date. First costume change and Paul Rutherford burst on stage with the t-shirt stating, 'Frankie say use condoms.' Today, a spokesman for the band said, quote, 'The boys feel strongly about the AIDS scare and wanted to make a statement. The t-shirts have been designed by Catherine Hamnett. It was all a last-minute affair. There are no plans for them to go on sale at the moment, but they might by the spring.'" End quote. Yesterday, Frankie were busy shooting a video for their new single out next month. It will be Watching the Wildlife, another track off their Liverpool LP. Next week, the group fly to Florence to start their Florence tour. The spokesman added, quote, "The group is enjoying the tour. There are no plans about a split, although it looks likely Holly Johnson will record a solo album." End quote. And reports on the t-shirt, Frankie Say Use Condoms, not only captured the attention of the British press, but also coincided with a pivotal moment in public health awareness. Following its announcement at the end of 1986, the UK government launched the Don't Die of Ignorance campaign in January 1987, same time as the tour, which prominently featured on television and included leaflets distributed to every household in the United Kingdom. Amidst this backdrop, the t-shirt garnered attention, not only within the UK, but also across the Atlantic, where newspapers such as the San Francisco Examiner, Detroit Press and Philadelphia Inquirer, to name just a few, reported on the mixed public reception of the UK government's campaign while highlighting the Frankie Say Use Condoms t-shirt. And news of the t-shirt reached as far as Australia's Sydney Morning Herald, underlining the global conversation surrounding HIV/AIDS awareness and the impact of Frankie Goes to Hollywood. Then, the following year, on the 28th of May 1988, the Liverpool Echo ran the headline, "Frankie Goes to the Party," where they report, "Holly Johnson's fear of AIDS is the reason he is making his solo debut tomorrow. The former Frankie frontman will appear at Party 2 in London, the Action Against AIDS special benefit concert. The concert is part of the International AIDS Day events and will be Holly's only solo appearance this year. Holly feels so strongly about the AIDS issue that he has agreed to make his first solo appearance since leaving Frankie Goes to Hollywood. Quote, AIDS is such a terrible thing and I just feel that people are still not doing enough about it. End quote. Holly, who is taking time off from work on his new solo album for MCA, says, quote, I'm involved because I feel I have a moral and social obligation to do so. End quote. Joining Holly at the concert are Aztec Camera, Jimmy Somerville and Richard Coles from The Communards, The Strangers and Ben and Tracy from Everything But The Girl, plus a host of other stars. Lending support to the event are people like Bross, UB40, T-Pow, Bananarama, New Order, ABC and The Christians. Gary Christian told Beat It, quote, I like to see people making every effort to dispel the myths surrounding this sad disease. I just hope people join in the fight against AIDS. End quote. And in the same year, 1988, Holly challenged his record contract with ZTT in a bid to depart Frankie Goes to Hollywood and pursue a solo career in court, ultimately emerging victorious. The following year, 1989, Holly released his first solo album, which soared to the number one position and received widespread acclaim from critics. The album's singles, including Love Train, Americanos and Atomic City, all achieved top five status on the charts, firmly establishing his reputation as a successful solo artist. Additionally, Holly took part in a charity project for the Hillsborough Disaster Fund, teaming up with Sir Paul McCartney, The Christians and other artists to record the hit single Ferry Cross the Mersey, which topped the charts in both the UK and Ireland. Building on the successes of the 1990 remix album Hallelujah, he launched his second solo album, Dreams That Money Can't Buy, in 1991, thereby further solidifying his musical legacy. However, by the end of 1991, Holly received the life-altering news that he had tested positive for HIV, coinciding closely with the tragic passing of Freddie Mercury due to AIDS-related complications. In an effort to safeguard his personal struggle from the prying eyes of the media, Holly confided only in his immediate family, including his parents and partner Wolfgang. Yet, refusing to dwell in some shame or conceal his reality, Holly made the courageous decision to disclose his status in an interview with the Times magazine. However, just 2 days before the interview's scheduled publication in 1993, the press intercepted the story, leading to an intense media frenzy as newspapers across the country headlined the revelation on the 8th of April 1993 with headlines such as Frankie Starr has AIDS virus. Singer Holly Johnson has AIDS virus. Holly has HIV virus. Pop star has AIDS. And the national tabloid, the Daily Mirror, never one to miss a story, ran the front page headline, Pop's Holly has AIDS virus. And again inside, singer in AIDS shock. Where, they report, pop star Holly Johnson has got the AIDS virus. It was revealed last night. The ex Frankie Goes to Hollywood singer said he was devastated when told and added, quote, I didn't take it very well at all, end quote. Holly, 33, who has vowed to fight the disease, admitted that he became infected during a wildly promiscuous period in his life. And he said the hardest part of dealing with his agony was breaking the news to his parents, Eric and Pat Johnson. Holly is the second showbiz star within days to reveal he is an AIDS victim. Comic DJ Kenny Everett shocked friends after admitting he was a sufferer. Holly found out he was HIV positive in the same week as Queen idol Freddie Mercury died of AIDS in November 1991. The Liverpool star confesses in an interview in The Times this Saturday that he became infected in 1983-84. He said, quote, there was an explosion of promiscuity in London at the time. It was like, this is what everyone is doing, so I did it too. It was before any government campaign to inform you about AIDS, end quote. Frankie Goes to Hollywood dominated the British pop scene in 1984 with a record-breaking 3 consecutive number one hits, Relax, Two Tribes and The Power of Love. Oh, way to go. Relax was adopted by many gays as an anthem to sex and Holly made no secret of his sexuality. Ironically, health chiefs praised Holly for spreading the safe sex message. Sandwell Health Authority in the West Midlands were so concerned about the spread of AIDS that they compiled a list of records they felt encouraged casual sex. They said the power of love helped put the right message across. Holly, who went solo after the group broke up, has been treated for Kaposi sarcoma. It is often a sign that full-blown AIDS has developed, but he says this has not happened yet. He said he wanted to put over that people should not feel guilty about being gay or leading lifestyles of pleasure. Quote, I was afraid they'd say that this person who was promoting a homosexual lifestyle was getting his just desserts, but we never said, go out and get AIDS. End quote. Oh, what a great way to put it. And all the other articles that I gathered on the same day virtually say the same, but I stuck with the Daily Mirror because the very next day, on the 9th of April 1993, they ran the headline, Relax and Take the Poodle for a Walk, with the strapline, Frankie Stars in New AIDS Shock. Now, three quarters of the page is occupied by a striking colour photograph of Holly, his partner Wolfgang, and a female friend walking down the street with their poodle named Funky. Holly sports an AIDS red ribbon pinned prominently to his hat, while the female friend displays her support with a red ribbon on her jacket. And the Daily Mirror confirms that the image was snapped the day prior, so that would be the day that the news broke regarding Holly's HIV status. And in a world often inundated with invasive paparazzi shots, it's easy to feel a pang of sympathy for those in the limelight. However, in this instance, I cannot help but feel a sense of admiration for Holly, portraying resilience rather than shame. Was it George Michael? I think it was George Michael who, following the toilet incident, chose to take control of the narrative by inviting the press to witness his defiance in the face of public scrutiny by booking a table at a restaurant and tipping off the paparazzi. Here with Holly, I hope the engagement with the Daily Mirror paparazzo was more strategic than intrusive. However, regardless, either way, it signifies a powerful stand against the stigma surrounding HIV, especially with the tabloid press. Anyhow, let's hear what the Daily Mirror had to say, where they report. It was one of Frankie Goes to Hollywood's greatest hits, and just a day after announcing that he has the AIDS virus, well, I don't think he's announced he's got AIDS, it's HIV, but anyhow, it's the Daily Mirror, former singer Holly Johnson managed to relax. Ooh, boom, boom. He vowed yesterday that he would carry on as usual, and that meant taking his pet poodle for a walk near his London home. Wearing a jaunty white hat with a red ribbon, 33-year-old Holly showed no sign of the panic and, quote, devastation, end quote, he felt when he was diagnosed HIV positive a year ago. See, we've got the HIV. His manager and longtime boyfriend, Wolfgang Kuhler, has been cleared of the virus. But last night it was revealed that the gay lover of Holly's pop partner, guitarist Paul Rutherford, has died of AIDS. The tragedy happened 2 years ago, but Paul, 34, was so upset at the loss of his hairdresser friend Joe Batty that he kept quiet about his death. Paul, who went solo when he and Holly split in 1987, has been cleared after tests. Holly, meanwhile, has given up his solo pop career to write his life story. A friend said last night, quote, he's in fine shape. He's doing all the things he's always done, end quote. Then, in June 1993, a small article in the Daily Mirror shared a story that many today will shake their heads in disbelief, but was a reality from 1985 to 2010. Because on the 17th of June 1993, the Daily Mirror ran the headline, Frankie Can't Get to Hollywood, where they report. Holly Johnson has blasted United States officials for refusing to allow him into the country. The former Frankie Goes to Hollywood star, who 2 months ago revealed he is HIV positive, is furious over the country's strict AIDS laws. Quote, this bigoted law is completely unjustifiable in light of the irrefutable fact that the first gay men in the UK who were struck down by AIDS in the early 80s were almost certainly infected by Americans. End quote. Oh, and he's right, because still to this day, although nobody is apportioning blame, it is thought that with the emergence of flying, the HIV virus was able to move about so freely. I mean, in recent years, the COVID-19 pandemic further highlighted the unprecedented ease with which both people and viruses traverse the globe. In the newspaper archives, it reveals that as early as 1985, individuals identified as carriers of HIV/AIDS faced restrictions on entering the United States. This policy was solidified into law in 1993, establishing a barrier that persisted for nearly two decades. It wasn't until President Obama's administration in 2010 that this discriminatory policy was overturned. Consequently, up until that point, even those living with HIV who adhered to medical treatment and achieved an undetectable viral load were barred from entering the country, including for tourism purposes. Then, in 1994, Holly's autobiography, A Bone in My Flute, hit the shelves, igniting a flurry of interest and media coverage. In a series of candid interviews promoting the book, Holly peeled back the layers of his glittering career, revealing not just the triumphs, but also the depths of his personal struggles. The Liverpool Daily Post, on the 16th of March 1994, ran the headline, Frankie Confessions, where Holly not only illuminated the path of his artistry, but also invited fans to understand the man behind the music. The pressures, the pleasures, and now the poignant moments of living with HIV shaping this new chapter of his life. There was a strong motivation behind Holly Johnson's decision to write his autobiography. Quote, I started to write the book a few weeks after I was diagnosed with an AIDS-related illness. A matter of days after my diagnosis, I saw an international rock star who had died of an AIDS-related illness pillared and patronised by the gutter press. With friends like mine, I thought I'd better write my own story. End quote. Holly, one-time leader of the 80s most successful band, Frankie Goes to Hollywood, describes the book as, quote, the story of an ugly duckling who sprouted wings, wore ruby slippers, waved a magic wand, had three number one records, and learnt to fly, end quote. With the risque title, A Bone in My Flute, the book tells the Holly Johnson story from the time he was living in Rathbone Road, Liverpool, as a four-year-old, right up to the present day. It does, however, stop short of talking about the consequences of his diagnosis. Quote, I didn't want to end the book on a black note. Perhaps I didn't want to give the voyeur the full Monty. What's it like to know you're going to die? Sooner or later, that's the question I see on people's lips when they interview me on the subject of AIDS. Perhaps it is still too big in my mind to examine the syndrome objectively. End quote. Written with disarming, sometimes shocking candour, the book, which is often extremely funny, must rank as one of the most vivid insights into the life of a major rock star to date. So truthful, in fact, that lawyers insisted on nearly 100 pages being cut from the manuscript to avoid a string of libel suits. What's left hardly pulls any punches, however. From his unhappy, seemingly unloved childhood, throughout his years of coming to terms with his sexuality, and onto the outrageous and promiscuous period of fame, Holly tells it like it was. Unlike the Beatles, who were favourites with all generations, Frankie's aggressive image and outrageous behaviour, coupled with Holly's undisguised homosexuality, narrowed their fan base. They were never taken to Liverpool hearts the way that the 60s bands had been. While the Beatles' careers ended in acrimony, Holly's relationship with his band seems to have been difficult from very early on. The lager-loutish behaviour of the lads, who formed the core of the band, is documented by Johnson. Quote, they had special passes made with a picture of a topless girl in stockings and suspenders and the slogan, Chicken for the Lads. They were passed out by the roadies to the more attractive girls who fought their way to the front of the stage. There were lots of stories told in dressing rooms of their sexual exploits. End quote. Following an occasion in France when the lads went on a rampage, throwing the hotel manager into the swimming pool and cavorting down hotel corridors as the Ku Klux Klan in pillowcases with eye holes burnt into them, Johnson took to staying in different hotels from the rest of the band. By then, they were only meeting up backstage just before their concerts, but even that was for too long. 2 minutes before going on stage at Wembley Arena, Holly and band member Mark O'Toole were involved in a fight, after which Holly demanded a personal bodyguard. The end of the road, as far as band relationships were concerned, was when Bob Geldof asked the band to come back from their American tour to play at Live Aid. Holly was all in favour, but the band turned it down because they reckoned it would cost at least £20,000 to play. At practically the same time, they became interested in doing a concert in South Africa because of the enormous amount of money on offer. As Holly puts it, quote, I couldn't believe they were contemplating two forms of career suicide in one day, end quote. That doesn't stop Holly Johnson's autobiography being a far greater achievement than any of his songs. There's life, death, exuberance, and a lot of sadness contained within its pages. There's also much in the honesty of the writing that may in some small way help dispel homophobic prejudice. Having suffered from that since adolescence, Holly Johnson, it seems, now hardly cares. He concludes, quote, "They can say what they like about me when I am gone, and I'm sure they will," end quote. Then, the following day, on the 17th of March 1994, in an interview with The Independent, under the headline, "I was expecting that call from Liz Taylor," they report, Holly Johnson has always attracted public disapproval. When he was 16, a distraught woman wrote to the Liverpool Echo claiming she had seen an alien with a green head and green lips get on the number 85 bus. When he became the lead singer of Frankie Goes to Hollywood, the BBC banned his hit single Relax, calling it obscene and fueling an argument about whether it was an ode to promiscuous gay sex. And when last year he publicly disclosed that he had AIDS, children in the street started shouting, "AIDS man!" at him, and a London barber's shop pulled down pictures of him having his hair cut. Oh, can you imagine? The reaction to his diagnosis, he says, has overall been far less hostile than he had anticipated. In fact, he now regrets having sat on the news for so long, as it put an intolerable strain on his partner and business manager, Wolfgang Cooley, himself negative, who was the only person to know. Sitting in their elegant Fulham terraced house, the walls laden with paintings from the Bloomsbury period, 34-year-old Johnson pats the two-seater leather couch he's sitting on. Quote, "This is where, for 18 months, I sat waiting to die. It wasn't shame exactly, but I had this sense of being dirty, dangerous and poisoned," end quote. Oh, those of us that got it recognises completely. Throughout that period, Cooley was encouraging Johnson to get involved with music again, but nothing could have been further from the singer's mind. Instead, he spent those 18 months writing a book about his life, A Bone in My Flute, which is published today, 1994. As well as being a defiant move to counteract any cash-in biography that might appear after his death, it was a means of resolving old resentments. There are still a lot of things which rankle about the way the music industry treated him, and particularly ZTT, the record company that signed up Frankie Goes to Hollywood in 1983 and entangled Johnson in a mass of legal problems arising from his contract. It was Cooley who encouraged Johnson to go public with his diagnosis. Asked why he didn't trust the information with any of his friends, the answer is simple. Quote, "If the news had leaked out, they'd have been immediately under suspicion, and I've got few enough friends as it is," end quote. One thing that his autobiography, A Bone in My Flute, painfully illustrates is the preciousness of friendships when fame comes so quickly to one so young. Often the word friend is enclosed in inverted commas. These days, his small circle of friends is almost entirely female. The few gay men that he counted as close friends are now dead, and the acquaintances that remain have slunk back into the shadows, reluctant, he says, to befriend someone with AIDS. Having himself spent 2 years before his diagnosis denying to himself the full implications of failing health, Johnson understands their reticence. The support from Cooler has undoubtedly held Johnson together, but his close partnership has won Johnson few friends in the music business, where Cooler is known as the main man who broke up Frankie Goes to Hollywood. A simpler explanation is that the other members of the band resented Johnson for taking the lion's share of the publishing royalties, something to which Johnson, as the main songwriter, felt perfectly entitled. Cooler's arrival on the scene 6 months before Frankie signed the ZTT contract and his constant presence at Johnson's side made him increasingly unpopular with the rest of the band and a target of endless abuse. Cooler is now extremely protective of his friend and continues to take the flak for all the confrontations that have ensued, not least in the long-running battle with ZTT. He appears to be perfectly cast in the supporting role that he has had to adopt as both Johnson's manager and partner. Cooler is tougher, cooler, more certain of what he says and does, while Johnson is disarmingly self-effacing and willing to please. Holly Johnson was born in Liverpool in 1960 to parents, his father, a private hire taxi driver, and his mother, an auxiliary nurse, who didn't exactly unite in loving support of their gay son. Even as a child, he stood out as a bird of the most exotic plumage. By the age of 24, he wore mascara and lip gloss and would raid his sister's supplies of peroxide to burn his scalp until his hair was 10 different shades of screaming orange. Obsessed with the music of the glam rock 70s, he adopted T-Rex, Velvet Underground, and the androgynous David Bowie as role models. His sexual awakening was slow and awkward, but as early as the age of 8, he can remember finding himself attracted to his sister's boyfriends. When he finally started experimenting with sex, it seemed dangerous and thrilling, and soon he became totally enthralled with the gay scene. Swept up by the new wave, Johnson began writing songs and playing in bands until ZTT came knocking. For Frankie Goes to Hollywood, 1984 was the year it all happened. They had 3 consecutive number ones. Holly Johnson is still writing songs, but despite the recent success of Bang, the greatest hits of Frankie Goes to Hollywood, which has sold over 1 million copies, he no longer has a recording deal. The industry appears to take as little interest in his music as it did in his announcement that he has AIDS. Quote, "There's been no word from Elton or from George Michael, who claim to be so supportive of people with AIDS," end quote, complains Cooler. To which Johnson adds, quote, "And I really did expect that phone call from Liz Taylor, but it never came," end quote, before bursting out laughing. But the hypocrisy of a music industry that, on the one hand, publicly supports AIDS charities and, on the other, closes the door on someone with the disease is not lost on Johnson for all his joshing. He is entitled to a little sour grapes. Taken on as a solo artist by MCA after Frankie split, he was dropped after only 1 album. But he has not become bitter. His health is good and his urge to write songs is untempered. Cooler has the last word. Quote, "We have no time for depression in this house," he says empathetically. Oh, it's mad, isn't it? But he's right, he's got a valid point. And then the following day, on the 18th of March 1994, the Daily Express ran the headline, "How Frankie Lives with a Deaf Curse." Oh, we know how this is going to pan out. But is it just me, but I'd be so fed up being referred to as Frankie. His name is Holly. Anyhow, what did the Daily Express have to say? Probably something intrusive. Anyway, let's... The pop world of the early 80s was moving on very safely and smoothly. The spitting anarchy of punk had been replaced by the clean-cut new romantics, Adam Ant, Duran Duran, Spandau Ballet, etc. But just when it became safe to let your children back into the record shop, along came Frankie Goes to Hollywood. Quote, "They have the wit of the Beatles and decadence of the Rolling Stones and the wildness of the Sex Pistols," end quote, said the Daily Express in 1984. They had leather, whips and chains. They had leather, whips and chains, band singles and numbers. Oh, start again. Dear. They had, because it's just making them sound fabulous. They had leather, whips and chains, band singles and number one hits. They were outrageous. The lead singer and chief songwriter was Holly Johnson, and his autobiography, A Bone in My Flute, is published this week. It is much more than an everyday story of a band who, under the stresses of success, implode in dispute. In 1991, Johnson, now 34, was diagnosed as HIV positive and is, as he says, quote, "living with AIDS, not dying of AIDS. That's very important," end quote. Oh, absolutely. See, this is why Holly's a hero. Anyhow, the article continues. He was, however, in hospital earlier this week for the first time in a year, but has since been released. Johnson was promiscuous, very promiscuous. In a virtually monogamous relationship since 1985, he says that although he had heard of AIDS in the early 80s, he, like many of his friends, were unaware of the fatal consequences and believes that if the government had reacted earlier and promoted safe sex, he would not be in the condition he is in. After Frankie Goes to Hollywood, Johnson had a number one solo album, but following his diagnosis, has concentrated on painting and writing. Quote, "When I was starting my book, I was having a bit of a nervous breakdown after the AIDS diagnosis I had received. It was the idea that with friends like mine, I'd better write my autobiography quick before it gets distorted. I didn't think I'd see the day when the book would be published and I would read the reviews," end quote. Okay, so the Daily Express didn't do too bad. Then, on the 31st of March 1994, the Liverpool Echo run what they term an exclusive over 2 days. Now, I won't read the first article, but you can find it on the Extra Tea blog through the link in the show notes. But they opened with, His face has a seen-it-all, done-it-all serenity. Holly Johnson, one of Liverpool's most famous sons, announced to the world in 1993 that he was HIV positive. It is a cold fact that now adds a poignant twist to his own life story. But despite his health, he is very optimistic. He laughs easily when recalling moments from his colourful past, and his sense of humour shines through. It only falters when he talks about the gutter press and sensation-seeking journalists. As a prominent figure among the media targets, he has had his fair share of misrepresentation, lies and bigotry, so much so that he tape records his own interviews. He is keen, however, to put the record straight. And they sign off this first instalment of this exclusive with Tomorrow, the Truth About Living with HIV. And part two of this exclusive comes the following day on the 1st of April 1994, where the Liverpool Echo ran the headline, alongside a photograph of Holly and his dog Funky, Living with AIDS, where they report. In 1991, Liverpool musician Holly Johnson revealed that he was HIV positive. Today, he talks frankly about his life under the shadow of AIDS. Past traumas have scarred Holly Johnson, but like most things in life, they have been turned into learning experiences. Since revealing that he is HIV positive, Holly has been concerned about misinformation, what he calls the jangle about AIDS. Quote, I am not into moralising, but a young friend of mine was gossiped out of Liverpool by the gay community because he has HIV infection. He's now living in a hostel in London the size of a box. The gay community wouldn't leave him alone. They gossiped about him so much that he just had to leave town. They accused him of spreading the virus. End quote. Sensational AIDS stories in the media also bring out Holly's vitriol. Quote, those known people with HIV infection in Liverpool have got to be handled with care and not treated as outcasts. End quote. Holly believes reporting of the illness must be improved in the years ahead. Quote, there is a lot of misinformation and lazy journalism. It is always people dying of AIDS when they mention someone with HIV. It's quite wrong. People are living with AIDS. They are not necessarily dying of it. End quote. I'm a man who received an AIDS diagnosis 2 years ago, and perhaps I look and feel more healthy now than I have ever done in my life, although I am prone to certain infections that healthy people aren't. End quote. Holly also revealed other aspects of AIDS information ignorance that are closer to home. Quote, it's quite safe for my sister Claire to come and visit me here with her two children without any risk of them being infected. Yet people have said to her, aren't you worried about going to London to visit your brother and taking your kids? Well, my mum still comes to see me too. It's that type of ignorance, though, that has to be fought. The part of my life I write about in the final chapter of the book details how large AIDS was to me then and my life then. It became more and more of a shadow. I'd lose close friends. One of my best friends who I grew up with in Liverpool, Jake, I lost him. Other flatmates from when I lived in Catherine Street are also gone. AIDS kind of moved in on me, and it's moving in on everyone. In the gay community, we were told not to sleep with gay Americans because they had this new gay cancer. That again was total misinformation. People continued not using condoms in the hope that it wasn't going to happen to them, and in their blind ignorance. I was like them in one sense. Although we didn't know how the HIV virus was transmitted, so condoms weren't an issue in 1983 when I believe I was infected. End quote. Holly says he was invited to a preview of the Oscar-winning box office hit Philadelphia, the first American film to look at the whole subject of AIDS. Quote, that film will do some good, he says. For the future, Holly is optimistic. Quote, I might write another book, but I do appreciate what hard work it is. I might call it Taxi to the Pleasure Dome, but I think I'm a better songwriter than I am an author. First of all, though, I'll have to live a life first, or rather, live some more. End quote. He has received a request to be a patron of a HIV housing project on Merseyside, but he says, quote, I will only agree to put my name to it if they actively employ a percentage of people with HIV infection. It is jobs people with HIV infection need. Jobs. End quote. Although he seldom returns to Merseyside these days, he still has a great fondness for the area. Quote, I miss some aspects. Being able to go here, there and everywhere and be anonymous. I miss being able to walk around and be ignored as I was when I grew up. People relate to you differently when you become famous. I always wanted fame, but without knowing the price I had to pay for that fame. Do you know what I mean? End quote. And so, to Frankie Goes to Hollywood, the group with whom Holly found fame. Does he keep in touch with the remaining members? The other four musicians he refers to as the lads in his book. Quote, well, Mark O'Toole rang me recently. He is living in Florida. Peter Gill is in Hull. I saw Brian Nash in The Butchers at the top of my road, of all places. But I don't know what Paul Rutherford is doing. A lot of water has gone under the bridge since then. I can deal with it now. End quote. Holly says he would love to put on an art exhibition in London and bring it up to Liverpool. Quote, I have a few paintings of mine around the house in the hallway, but generally I don't like having my own work on the wall. End quote. So, has Holly ever immortalised Liverpool in paint? Just as he helped make Ferry Cross the Mersey such an emotive hit all over again in the 80s, as well as appearing on the album called Simply Liverpool. He answers by showing me an original painting of the Liverpool skyline, which has been kept in his studio. He says, quote, this is from the days when I lived at Catherine Street, when I would go up on the roof and draw. It's a bit garish, but it captures the essence of that time. There's the glint of the sun on the glass panels of the cathedral, end quote. He says, staring at the canvas with its vivid colours and young Holly Johnson looking out from the corner, quote, oh yeah, I remember those clear blue skies. You really do get such beautiful sunsets in Liverpool. End quote. Then, 5 months later in September 1994, Holly opens up once more in another interview regarding his HIV status and overall health. Reflecting on his journey, Holly reveals that he suspects he became infected with the virus around 1983 to 84, marking a decade of living with the disease as 1994 arrives. Now, at that time, medical consensus, and still to this day, suggests that, on average, and it is only an average, HIV infection leads to AIDS-related complications and subsequent death within 8 to 10 years of becoming infected. This stark reality looms over Holly as he candidly discusses the physical and emotional toll that living with HIV has taken on him, while also expressing a glimmer of hope amidst the uncertainty surrounding his future. Where on the 18th of September 1994, the Independent newspaper ran the headline, "You think if I'd only been one of those nice Mormons, none of this would have happened." With the strapline, "Holly Johnson talks of his fight against AIDS." Where they report, AIDS has brought Holly Johnson to death's door. Perversely, it has also given his career a new lease of life. The flamboyant former frontman of Frankie Goes to Hollywood was always known for his style and nerve. Now he is a bona fide gay icon, attempting, he says, to, quote, give a two-finger job, end quote, to the serious and unpredictable bouts of illness that afflict him. Quote, I'm still here, and I've got this life-threatening disease. I might as well do exactly what I want to do with the time that I have on the planet. If it's a nail in my coffin, it's a nail in my coffin. End quote. What he wants to do is release a bold new single called Legendary Children, a celebration of gay creativity through the ages, including Alexander the Great, Michelangelo, and Shakespeare. Add your name to this hall of fame. The answer is clear, they're all of them queer. It's hard to imagine the song or its transvestite populated video being played on Top of the Pops, but that would be nothing new for Holly, whose debut Frankie single, Relax, was banned by the BBC in 1984. But these days, Holly Johnson is better known for being sick. Friends were shocked and a wave of sympathy was unleashed last year when he revealed he had AIDS. He was already very ill when the diagnosis was made in October 1991 and nearly died soon afterwards. But he recovered strength and courage while writing a frank and chatty autobiography called A Bone in My Flute, published earlier this year. Hello magazine visited the elegant four-story Parsons Green home he shares with his longtime partner Wolfgang Cooley and dog named Funky. In June this year, he appeared at the Gay Pride Rally in Brockwell Park, London, his first live performance for 7 years. Quote, it was incredible. 150,000 people went apeshit when I went on stage. People had told me I was now a gay icon, but I didn't believe them until that day. End quote. Stepping back on the promotional treadmill of the music business will be difficult. Our meeting was delayed a week by a savage bout of gastroenteritis that put him in hospital for 2 days. When we did meet, he looked blotchy and puffed up, but seemed strong. Quote, "It's unpredictable. I can be really ill for a week and then be perfectly fine." End quote. Television recordings and photo calls have to be scheduled around daily visits to a clinic. Quote, "God, I'm snowed under with medical appointments. If you involve yourself with medical trials like I do, you have to have even more of them in order to be monitored." End quote. Precautions must be taken. Quote, "I tried to avoid flying because of the air conditioning on planes. Filters are never cleaned and things like that." End quote. He has paid for the recording of the new single himself and licensed it out to the label Music for Life. Quote, "If there's an album coming, it'll be done bit by bit, when I feel like it, with no deadlines imposed on me. I can't work in the studio for 18 hours a day like other people do." End quote. Many members of his extended gay family have already been claimed by AIDS. One of them, Carl, was among the first 30 people in Britain to die as a result of what Holly said he knew at the time as, quote, "the American disease," end quote, "because you seem to catch it by sleeping with natives of the United States." Quote, "It got very close to me. Friends my age started to die and I thought, well, I did more or less the same kind of thing as he did when I was 23. I knew that there was a definitive possibility, although one you tend to deny. It seems I've probably been positive since 1983, so for my entire public life. Who would have thought it of that lightly overweight, healthy-looking Holly Johnson person?" End quote. He was told his status on the same day Freddie Mercury died. The doctor said the lumps on his skin were the telltale Kaposi sarcomas. Quote, "I had a nervous breakdown, to use a cliche," he remembered. "My brain collapsed. I lay on the couch and waited to die for quite a few months." End quote. Experimental drugs made him worse. Quote, "The first year was very black. Some people adjust to it quite quickly, but I didn't. I'd say I'm still not completely adjusted to it." End quote. It helped to write his memoirs. Quote, "Before they started interviewing old friends." End quote. The book paints a rough but blackly funny picture of how young Billy Johnson grew up in Liverpool with a passion for makeup, David Bowie and Mark Bolan, and changed his name to Holly after the character in Lou Reed's song Walk on the Wild Side. It is open about the drugs and promiscuous sex of the life he led before meeting Wolfgang 10 years ago. Telling people was hard. Quote, "Most people with an AIDS diagnosis don't even tell their family, let alone the world. I kept putting it off because while I wasn't talking about it, perhaps it wasn't happening. Like, if I don't tell me parents, then it's not really there. Know what I mean?" End quote. He did tell his parents first, then a newspaper, which was how many of his friends found out. Quote, "I'd been very insulated and alienated a lot by then, in the previous 18 months anyway, because it was just too difficult to lie to your friends when they asked, 'What's that strange mark on your face?' or 'Where have you been for the past week?'" End quote. Wolfgang was a strength. Quote, "It's not easy to maintain a gay relationship anyway. I suppose I was lucky that he didn't immediately run away. I'm not going to pretend that it's been easy and we haven't had our ups and downs and nearly killed each other several times or left each other. It's hard for people who don't know us to comprehend how normal the relationship is." End quote. He has tried to avoid becoming a professional, quote, "person with AIDS," end quote, shying away from charity work. Quote, "But I might do a few things. It's unavoidable. If I can possibly help to destigmatize the whole issue, then that's a good thing," end quote. Occasionally, the defiant tone drops. Quote, "You get weird thoughts like, if only I'd been one of those nice clean-cut Mormons who knock on your door on a Friday night when you're having your dinner, none of this would have happened to me," end quote. He has had more than the 15 minutes of fame his childhood hero Andy Warhol apportioned him. And I'm sure I've seen a photograph of them together. Quote, "At least it wasn't all in vain. When I'm ill and go to hospital, which happens a couple of times a year, it seems there'll be a male nurse who will twitter round me and say, 'Oh, Frankie Goes to Hollywood meant so much to me when I was 14. It's quite endearing, really. I can relate to that, to being a fan," end quote. Oh, do you know what I admire about Holly in these interviews is, especially at this time, 93, 94, is that, not age, talk about year, 1993, 1994, is his ability to be so open and honest, qualities that likely evoked unsolicited sympathy rather than stigma at a time when misconceptions abounded. I mean, this openness regarding his sexuality and his experiences with HIV allows him to transcend the negative narratives often propagated by the press, particularly tabloid press, that sought to demonise not just anybody with HIV/AIDS, but especially a gay man and somebody like Holly in the public eye. It's just, oh, it's amazing. And rather than fueling prejudice, Holly's candid sharing of both his status and the circumstances surrounding the possible routes of infection effectively shuts down the sensationalist speculation by the press, particularly the tabloid press or the gutter press, which surely helps recast what was once termed the gay plague into a more shared human experience. And by 1993-94, it was refreshing that the press could highlight Holly's achievements while exploring the reality of fame intertwined with HIV/AIDS. And I probably should point out, because you probably sat there thinking, well, actually, we've heard nothing but HIV/AIDS, every time Holly wants to promote new music or a book. But these articles have all been gathered and selected to create this episode. But there are many articles and interviews that Holly gave where they briefly touch upon his HIV/AIDS status, or they don't mention it at all when he's promoting music or the book. Ultimately, it seems Holly's genuine down-to-earth nature shines through, showcasing him as not just an artist, but also a thoroughly nice person, navigating the complexities of his public and private life. And on the 27th of October 1994, the Daily Mirror report that at the London Lighthouse, which was a HIV/AIDS drop-in centre with a residential hospice unit for those in the final stages of life, is to host a special televised concert to raise much-needed funds, where, they report, Holly Johnson will host a televised concert in aid of London's Lighthouse AIDS Centre. The AIDS-afflicted singer, oh gosh, will be joined by top musicians including Suede, Nina Cherry, Pulp, and Everything But The Girl, who agreed to perform for free. The show, to be broadcast in January, was devised by TV producer Malcolm Jerry after a relative spent his dying days at the Lighthouse.
Before we go, I must make one final appeal to you. Send in donations, cash, cheques and postal orders. The Lighthouse needs your help. The huge cuts in government grants have meant that all AIDS charities are having a difficult time at the moment, so even the smallest donation will be welcomed. Even if you can't spare anything, I hope that you have learned a little about those of us who have to live in the shadow of AIDS. We do not want to be seen as AIDS victims, but human beings who are living and facing this challenge daily. Don't believe everything you read in the press. This is not the gay plague. HIV and AIDS does not discriminate. So stay safe and protect yourself at all times.
After the filming of the concert at the London Lighthouse on the night of Monday the 31st of October 1994, which went on to be aired in January 1995, the Guardian newspaper, in attendance, reported on the event under the headline, The Power of Love, when pop came to aid the Lighthouse. London Lighthouse has never tried to hide AIDS behind its architect-designed doors, so local residents must have wondered what was afoot when huge sheets of tarpaulin went up along the railings of the centre's car park last Monday night. But those whose identity was being protected were not users of the North Kensington AIDS Centre, they were pop stars, arriving for a concert being filmed by Initial Film and Television to raise money for Lighthouse. The whole of Lighthouse's downstairs area, which during the day functions as a drop-in centre for people affected by HIV and AIDS, had been taken over by cameras, sound equipment and men and women with clipboards and mobile phones. Anyone who'd come in for a massage or counselling session was discreetly ushered upstairs. Even the outside shed had been cleared of broken beds and defunct computer equipment to be transformed into a hospitality suite. The main cause of dissent among the building's users was the closure of the cafe, always the lifeblood of the organisation, and there was a handful of people who felt they had been compromised to make way for a brash media event. But high-profile events such as these are essential if the survival of organisations like London Lighthouse is to be guaranteed. Practically all of the 23 Lighthouse residents, plus carers and staff, came down from the unit on the second floor to watch the concert, filmed both in the cafe and the Ian McKellen Hall. Some of the audience had dressed up specially for the occasion, drag queens, pretty boys with mascara on and trendy lads in natty pinstripe suits. One resident had come down in his caftan. But there was something rather homely about the event too, with plenty of hot chocolate being sipped. London Lighthouse has always operated a no drinking, no drugs and no swearing policy in the building, and even in these circumstances, the house rules still applied. Most other media events seem to fall prey to the bitchy world of insufferable egos, but not this one. Quote, "We've had no temper tantrums at all," remarked a surprised Helen Terry, the programme's producer. The original idea for making this television programme, which is to be part pop and part documentary, came from Malcolm Jerry, who formerly produced The Tube and is now head of Initial Film and Television. After visiting a close relative who was dying in the lighthouse, he wanted to try raise money for the organisation, which is being affected by cuts to the AIDS-related health services. But it was Helen's idea to involve bands such as Suede, Pulp, Ride and St Etienne in order to reach a significantly younger audience, the sort of people who would only wear a red ribbon as a fashion accessory. According to Steve, a heterosexual man of 31 who uses the Lighthouse, quote, "A lot of young people aspire to the kind of bands playing here tonight, so if they can give it a rubber stamp, then maybe more people will begin to take AIDS seriously. The messages have become too sophisticated and too subliminal of late, and you have to be quite media literate to realise that HIV can kill, or at the very least, seriously fuck up your life." End quote. Jarvis Cocker, the stick-like lead singer of Pulp, said he could still remember pre-AIDS days, but then added obliquely, quote, "People I know don't really have sex anymore. A concert like this is important because people have become too used to the issue." End quote. Pulp performed Underwear, a song about a casual sexual encounter, that excruciating moment of no return when you're down to your underpants and realise you don't want to have sex after all. Holly Johnson, who was both performing and also acting as MC for the event, was probably the most popular man of the evening. Quote, "It's great to have him here," said one resident, who then went up and hugged him. This is Johnson's first major fundraising exercise for AIDS. Quote, "I've been to Lighthouse twice before, once for a memorial service and once for acupuncture," he said. "And I've always rather liked it, so I'm doing this to help raise money for people on the unit. Places like Lighthouse are desperately short of funds because there's still an underlying feeling that people with AIDS somehow don't deserve to be helped," end quote. Did he feel self-conscious about being there both as a performer and as a person with AIDS? Quote, "A little, but I'm used to that by now," end quote. His dog, Funky, was one of the main attractions of the evening and, like everyone involved in the event, had his own crew pass to get him in and out of the building, though this one was in the shape of a bone with the words "Very Important Pet" printed on it. The only time Johnson was less than pleased was when Radio 1 asked him to do the links for the radio version of the show. Quote, "For a moment I hesitated," he said, "because Radio 1 haven't exactly been supportive of my latest single. Indeed, in spite of good reviews, the station has not playlisted his new single, Legendary Children, all of them queer." Another key figure was Alison Moyet singing her version of the Jacques Brel song Nimi Ki Pa. The cafe was mesmerised by the penetrating sound of her soaring voice. When she finished, a resident with AIDS-related dementia went up to her, announced that he had HIV, then asked if she believed in Jesus. Quote, "Yes, I do," she replied, not in the least fazed by the serious nature of the question. Horse also went down well, not only because of her androgynous look, but also because of the sheer power of her voice, which seemed to fill the entire building. And then it was Nina Cherry's turn to get up and sing her version of Trouble Man by Marvin Gaye, a song about coming up against the hard things in life. Later, she told me that she had a particular affection for London Lighthouse, since this was where a close friend had spent the last months of his life. Quote, "It was so consoling to come here and be able to go away again knowing he was happy to be left," she said. Finally, Holly Johnson crystallised the spirit of the evening by singing The Power of Love, a song which has the ability to hurl your heart and soul into the intensity of the issue. Steve noticed that halfway through the song, his eyes locked with Holly's. Quote, "I sensed a sadness in his eyes, but also a look of hope," he said. Holly told me afterwards that the song can make him sad, but that it is difficult to sing if you let your emotions overtake you. On this occasion, however, he sang it with a strength and passion that had the whole audience gripped. As moving and gritty as it ever was, the song put forward one of the most potent messages of the evening, that it's not just casual sex with which has fueled the spread of AIDS, but also the power of love.
Make love your
concert, Live at the Lighthouse, aired on ITV on the 14th of January 1995. A new year and yet no new breakthrough when it comes to treatment for HIV/AIDS. And in April of 1995, you have newspapers like the Woking Inquirer that run headlines such as Holly Johnson faces death with dignity, singer retains his sense of humour, and Johnson's facing sad end with dignity. Now, I must stress that Holly is so iconic that he is all over the newspaper archives in every newspaper up and down the country, doing bits and bobs. However, here we focus on the media's coverage of his HIV diagnosis. While the press did highlight other facets of Holly's multifaceted career, including his contributions to music and culture, the framing of his diagnosis, as we've heard, often overshadowed his other achievements. Thus, it is crucial to understand the duality of the coverage. His battle with HIV was a significant part of his narrative, but it existed alongside a rich tapestry of talent and influence that still to this day defines Holly's legacy. For example, in a more light-hearted article, the Liverpool Echo on the 11th of August 1995 reports, City hosts gay festival. Hundreds of gays and lesbians are expected to flock to Liverpool tomorrow for the city's first ever gay pride festival. Around 32 acts, from magicians to drag artists, will take to the stage at Pownall Square in the city centre. Famous names backing the event include Lily Savage, Holly Johnson and Boy George. The day-long spectacular kicks off at noon and money raised will be split between an HIV/AIDS charity and a gay support group. And 1996 was equally a busy year for Holly, who puts on an exhibition where the Evening Standard report on the 23rd of February 1996. Pop star Holly Johnson is returning to his first love, art. The former Frankie Goes to Hollywood frontman will stage his first one-man show on the 11th of March at the Gallery in Cork Street, London, where David Bowie made his art debut last year. The House of Holly exhibition was assembled over the last 10 years and comprises paintings, drawings, collage and printmaking. Johnson's paintings are notable for their vibrant style and bold colours, reflecting his witty, powerful commentaries on life in the 80s and 90s. Portraits of sophisticated women contrast with male nudes. One intimate self-portrait is titled, Are You Sure? There is a still life, Wolfgang's Passion Flowers, dedicated to Johnson's boyfriend, While a collection of jewelled, fake fur-covered and gilded heart-shaped boxes display the artist's humour. Fans of Johnson's chart-topping music will recognise the familiar religious and sadomasochist images that crop up in other works, which include plastic toys and condoms. Holly Johnson was about to begin an art degree in 1983 when the group was signed to a record label and Relax went straight to number one, despite a BBC ban. HIV antiretroviral therapy, ART, which began in the UK in 1996, has significantly transformed the landscape of HIV/AIDS treatment. Initially designed for individuals with a low CD4 count, a critical marker indicating a weakened immune system, ART has enabled many to avoid progressing to an AIDS diagnosis. While the early treatments were harsh on the liver, kidneys and bones, the benefits of extending life expectancy and improving quality of life far outweighed the potential adverse effects. Today, ART continues to evolve, offering individuals living with HIV the possibility of a near-normal life expectancy, highlighting the ongoing advancements in medical research and patient care within this field. And for Holly to be still belting out his number one hits all these years on, I and a friend are off to see him at the Royal Albert Hall on Monday, means he took up the therapy. Fast forward 3 years, Holly is set to release his second single, Disco Heaven, from his third studio album, Soulstream. However, as anticipation builds, the journalist attempts to cast a shadow over his triumphant return by focusing again on his HIV diagnosis. In an interview with The Guardian, the headline I Will Survive grabs attention, alluding to Gloria Gaynor's iconic anthem, while simultaneously underscoring Holly's journey with HIV. This juxtaposition of resilience and challenge reflects the ongoing struggle for acceptance and understanding in the public eye, even as Holly strives to celebrate the release of his second single and the joy of his third studio album, where on the 16th of August 1999, The Guardian reports, 6 years ago it was announced that Holly Johnson had AIDS, that he wouldn't be with us for much longer. The former leader of 80s pop group Frankie Goes to Hollywood set to work, first an autobiography, then an exhibition of his paintings in the West End, and now he's recorded his first album in 10 years. So much to do, so little time. He must look a right sight, says one colleague. Isn't he dead? Asks another. The rumours about his appearance spread around the office. Disfigured, wheelchair-ridden, poor sod. Wolfgang and Funky answer the door. Funky yelps and climbs my lower leg, while Wolfgang makes the coffee. Wolfgang, the lover, and Funky, the white poodle, have been living with Johnson for more than a decade. Upstairs I hear scrapings and squeakings. Sorry, Holly's not quite ready yet. I wonder if he's going to make a grand Norma Desmond sweep into the room. I am big. It's the pop business that got small. Funky isn't looking at his best today, what with the lampshade over his head. Quote, it's to stop him licking his willy, explains Wolfgang. Oh. It's to stop him licking his willy, explains Wolfgang. He's got a nasty sore on it and you know what dogs are like. They'll lick and lick till there's nothing left. End quote. More scrapings and squeakings. I look at the walls which are covered in paintings. The whole house is a wonderful gallery. While the lounge is dominated by Urban Bloomsbury's, Wolfgang collects Duncan Grant's and Vanessa Bell's. As we scroll up the stairs, the paintings become progressively more louche. Gorgeous sailor boys, Amazonian breasts and bionic pecs, and bejeweled penis after bejeweled penis. All Johnson's own work. Eventually, he walks in, and I'm shocked. Johnson looks wonderful. More jowly than in the old days, when he could have been a poster boy for the school of homoerotic kitsch. But handsome, healthy, mature. He wants to play me the new single, so we head off to the recording studio in the attic. He turns on the video, tells me it's his directorial debut and starts smiling. The song, Disco Heaven, seems to be a celebratory throwback to his clubbing days. The video features celebrities such as Boy George and Jasper Conran imitating great gay icons like Divine and Lee Bowery. Quote, all me fabulous guest stars. It was bloody hard work. End quote. Johnson, now 39, still talks in the same high camp of yesteryear with a pouting stress between syllables. Quote, it's a song about remembering, in a positive way, your friends that aren't here anymore, end quote. Johnson has plenty of friends to remember. He can count 15 friends with AIDS, all of them now dead. Quote, you know they're all there, dancing together in disco heaven. Disco heaven, 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 we are. About 3 years ago, he underwent another shift. He had changed his lifestyle. Healthy food, herbal remedies, vitamin supplements, no fags, no touring, no hassles, and the finest medication. He started to feel better. Yes, he's still tired easily, but he no longer succumbed to the first lungful of bacteria in the air. Quote, "I'm winning. For years now I felt I can go on living. I'm bigger than it." It being HIV. End quote. He says with a wonderful melodramatic gesture and giggle. When he started to feel better, he built the studio and began to sing again. Quote, "When you're ill and don't feel like singing, it was really quite tough getting my voice back into shape." End quote. Psychologically tough as well. Yeah, you ask yourself, is it still there? Can I still do it? Will anyone want to hear it? On the new album, he has re-recorded his famous ballad, The Power of Love. Whenever people come up to him in the street and ask if he's Holly Johnson, he says they'll always mention that song and tell him how they fell in love with it. He says this version is more mellow. Johnson seems so balanced and calm. Quote, "Is that the right word?" he says. "I don't know if it's calmness. I don't know what it is. It's called growing up, isn't it? Not caring so much about what people think about you as an individual, accepting yourself for who you are." End quote. Did he really care so much? I pretended I didn't, but I think I did. I was the pop star who wouldn't wear the same outfit twice. A few weeks ago, Frankie Goes to Hollywood's classic album Welcome to the Pleasure Dome re-entered the charts, and in October, the new album will be released. Is the renaissance complete? He quickly reminds me the album was only in the charts because it was on special offer. But what if things did take off like last time? Quote, "Lightning doesn't strike twice," he says. I'm not expecting or hoping for that to happen, but you know it's almost like the success has already happened in my head by virtue of recording an album that I'm really happy with and that I can put on in front of you without cringing. That's pretty good going, isn't it? Oh, just amazing. And finally, on the 28th of May 2025, the I newspaper, in an interview with Holly, reported the following. In 1991, Johnson was diagnosed with HIV, changing his life overnight. Given up to 2 years to live, he decided to go public in 1993, inspired by the writer Derek Jarman. He soon became an outcast. Quote, "Not just in the music industry. The phone didn't ring much for quite a long period of time. It was a very strange sense of isolation, to be honest. I got written off by people as a lost cause, and I do understand it to some degree, because it was a very scary illness for people at that time." He did have visits from good friends like Kirsty MacColl, who used one of Johnson's paintings as cover artwork, and DJ Janice Long. But there was also a surprise phone call from David Bowie. They'd never met, but shared an art dealer. Quote, "I think that's how he got my number. He was just asking questions. How are you? Are you exercising? What song should I sing on my next tour?" It was like getting a telephone call from God on a Saturday night. It was bizarre. Johnson suffered, quote, 5 or 6 years of extremely bad health, where my partner looked after me very carefully. I'm very grateful for that. End quote. In 1996 came hope with the introduction of combination therapy. Johnson was put on new drugs, quote, "And it worked for me. Somehow, I survived." And you can keep up to speed with all things Holly Johnson by following him on Instagram at Mr. Holly Johnson or visiting his website for tickets, merchandise and updates at hollyjohnson.com.